Welcome, everyone, to today's conference. I'd now like to turn the call over to our first speaker, Marilena Incapié. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Great. Thank you so much. And good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking the time out on a Sunday morning to join us for this important call. My name is Marilena Incapié. I'm the Executive Director of the National Immigration Law Center, an organization that works to defend and advance the rights of low-income immigrant families. Yesterday, after nearly 2 years of fear-mongering through leaked threats, the Trump administration revealed its plans for yet another cruel attack on immigrant families. Building on the traumatic separation of families at the border, which rightfully shook the nation's collective conscience, the Trump administration is once again proposing a rule change that will similarly result in more separated families and have lifelong consequences on the health and well-being of children and immigrant families to thrive. Since we saw the first leaked draft in early 2018, we at the National Immigration Law Center partnered with the Center for Law and Social Policy, CLASP, to build the Protecting Immigrant Families campaign to bring together a diverse cross-section of stakeholders to fight back. We knew that this proposed rule would not just be about harming immigrant children and immigrant families. This is not about any one of our communities. It is about all of us. This extremist policy change will impact our communities across the country. With me today is a group of women who are helping to lead the fight against this dangerous rule, and I'd like to introduce them now. Our first speaker will be Olivia Golden, who is our co-chair in this campaign. She's the executive director of CLASP. Second, you'll hear from Dr. Colleen Kraft, the president of the board of directors of the American Academy of Pediatrics, also a very strong partner to us in this campaign. Neera Tanden, president and CEO of the Center for American Progress, which also is a very active member of the campaign. And finally, you will hear from Aijin Poo, executive director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, one of my movement sisters. Before turning things over to these amazing speakers, let me share a few initial thoughts about this proposed rule. First, it is a proposed rule. This is not final, and we have a lot of work to do to make sure that we either stop it in its tracks or mitigate the harm. If it's allowed to take effect, the consequences would be devastating, severe, and widespread. We at the National Immigration Law Center have spent the last two decades working with immigrant communities on improving access to the tools and programs all of our communities need to thrive. In fact, the challenge has been to get immigrant families to apply for and receive the benefits and safety net programs that their children and they need to thrive in this country. Yesterday, all of those improvements which made our communities healthier and better places to live were met by the Trump administration's disdain for working-class brown families. The Trump administration is trying to achieve through the back door what it hasn't been able to do through Congress, which is to radically reform the legal immigration system. Through this proposed rule, they want to restrict family immigration as the use of certain programs can prevent families from being reunited, getting a green card, or eventually becoming naturalized citizens. Let's be clear, there is absolutely no good policy rationale for this proposed rule. It's truly an example of Trump and Stephen Miller at their worst. They are scapegoating communities of color to excite their base. The timing, of course, is no coincidence. We are 44 days away from the midterm elections, and they are also hoping to distract from the numerous scandals plaguing this administration by going after an old political scapegoat, immigrants. The American people will not be fooled. Earlier leaked drafts of this proposed rule added a massive number of hoops for immigrants seeking their green cards to jump through, and this proposed regulation is no different. Those with limited English, those who reside in states that choose to invest in healthcare for pregnant women and children will be impacted. And that's just what's on paper. We know from decades of experience in this field that the chilling effect will extend far beyond those categories that are described in the proposed rule. Soon, the administration will be asking and receiving public comments on this hateful proposal, and the Protecting Immigrant Families campaign stands ready to fight back. We must use our collective voices to reject this latest proposal of hate, and we'll provide more information towards the end of the call about how to do that. So I will turn it over to our first speaker, Olivia Golden. Olivia?
Thank you so much, Maria Elena, and thank you to everybody on the call for taking this time on a Sunday morning. I'm Olivia Golden. I'm the Executive Director of the Center for Law and Social Policy, or CLASP, And we're a nonprofit organization with almost 50 years of experience in nonpartisan public advocacy and a core anti-poverty mission, reducing poverty and improving the lives of low-income people. This proposal, of course, is the exact opposite. It's a proposal that will leave the nation hungrier, sicker, and poorer, counter to our national interests. And it's also counter to historic American values. How you live your life should define you, not race or income, and this is a proposal that counters that. Marielena highlighted the way the proposal represents the latest Trump administration attack on immigration and immigrant families. It's also the latest in a long series of attacks on low-income families, and in particular on health care and nutrition for low-income families. The proposal includes very specific attacks on core public health programs like Medicaid and Medicare, as well as attacks on people with health conditions and income tests for the first time, so that a family needs to earn more than $62,000 a year for a family of four to get a green light as fully contributing. So the proposal at its core says that work and family don't matter. Wealth and income are what matters. It denies ordinary working families a place in America's future. It also is a direct attack on parents and therefore on children. And that's one of the reasons that it's a proposal that not only damages families themselves, but the nation as a whole. It targets documented working parents playing by the rules who are looking to health, nutrition, housing, supports for their families. And we know from really decades of research that children's well-being, their health, their economic security, their schooling and learning depends on their parents and on their families' stability of income, housing, and nutrition security. So the proposal is really, as Marielena said, that there's no research supporting it, and even worse, everything that we know suggests it's a terrible idea in a country where one in four children has an immigrant family member, has an immigrant parent. It's a proposal that puts families and the nation's future at risk. A number of people, governors, mayors, health providers, people from around the country, have already commented on the way in which this proposal and earlier drafts damage not only the children and families directly attacked by it, but whole communities. That governors and mayors have highlighted to the Office of Management and Budget both the financial damage that is done to their communities when federal resources for health care or health insurance aren't available to them, for example, as well as the damage to public health and to community success done when families are damaged. So we have to fight back. I just want to underline Marielena's point that this is not the end but the beginning of the fight, that there's a comment period of 60 days from the time this proposal is published. Submitting public comments is a powerful way to fight back because the administration is required by law to take them into account. We'll be sharing information as we go along on a number of ways to comment, but the Protecting Immigrant Families website at www.protectingimmigrantfamilies.org will always have the most updated information. So it isn't done. This is a proposal, not an actual policy. It's important for immigrant families and communities to know that this is not a done deal and that across the country, people are coming together to fight back together, which is our strength. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Olivia. And next we'll hear from Dr. Colleen Kraft. Dr. Kraft?
Yes. Hello, and thank you for having me on the call this morning. My name is Dr. Colleen Kraft, and I'm the president of the American Academy of Pediatrics. As pediatricians, we care for and care about all children, and we do everything in our power to ensure that our patients are healthy. The public charge proposal announced yesterday is a dangerous threat to child and family health, and the Academy is urging the Trump administration to immediately rescind its proposal. By widening the public charge test, millions of children and families are at risk of being deprived of vital nutrition, health, and housing services. And this is all out of fear that using those programs puts obtaining a visa or a green card in jeopardy. The impact of this proposal is massive. One out of every four children in the United States lives in an immigrant family, meaning that the child or at least one parent is foreign-born. The public charge proposal presents immigrant families with an impossible choice. Keep yourself or your children healthy and risk being separated, or forego these vital services like preventive care and food assistance so your family can stay together in this country. This disruption of family unity comes mere months after the same government agency pursued a policy of forcibly separating immigrant parents and children at the border, many of whom are still separated today. Our pediatricians across the country have already witnessed the chilling effect of the leaked proposal in their own practices. They are telling us about families who are disenrolling from these programs or avoiding health services that their children are eligible for. These children are eligible for Medicaid and they're not being enrolled. Young children who would benefit from nutrition programs are missing out. Expectant mothers are foregoing prenatal care. And this is all because of the fear that doing so could get their families separated. This carries real consequences for children. We know that in this country, 46 million children rely on Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program. Children covered in these programs miss fewer school days due to illness or injury. They perform better in school, and they're much more likely to graduate and attend college than their uninsured peers. They are much more likely to become healthier adults who earn higher wages and pay more in taxes. Children who are deprived of these programs suffer the consequences, and this will also have a negative impact on our economy. This proposal is unprecedented and serves to further intimidate and frighten families who seek needed services to keep them healthy and productive. The American Academy of Pediatrics strongly opposes this harmful regulation and will be engaging its 67,000 members to take action. Pediatricians oppose any proposal that puts child health at risk, and we will continue to speak out to ensure that all children, no matter where they are born or where their parents are born, are healthy and safe. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Colleen. And our next speaker is Neera Tandon. Neera?
Hi, everybody. I want to thank our partners at CLASP, the National Immigration Law Center, and every coalition group that helped organize this call, as well as all the pediatricians. And my thanks go as well to everyone who's going to help amplify this critical issue. I'll be pretty brief. Because a lot of the arguments have been made, but I think we all recognize that Donald Trump's new public charge rule goes against one of our fundamental values as people. If you work hard and play by the rules, you should be able to build a better life here in America. Actually, it obviously flies in the face of the idea that America is a country of immigrants, an idea that Donald Trump has been attacking since the first day he entered the presidential campaign. Under this rule, families of four who make less than around $63,000 a year could be denied a green card or permanent residency. It's clear that this rule is nothing less than a wealth test intended to punish working-class immigrants and families of modest means. Trump's plan would affect millions of children, including children who are citizens. A quarter of all children living in this country have at least one parent who's an immigrant, and 90% of these children were born in the United States. Under Trump's rule, their access to medical care, food, or other basic needs would be at risk. And I'd just like to share my story, which is that my parents were immigrants. My mother raised us because at one point my father left our family. And when that happened, my mother, who was an immigrant, had to rely on the safety net. We were on welfare for a time. We were on food stamps for a time. I got free and reduced lunch. We used Section 8 vouchers just for a few years until she was able to get herself back on her feet. And essentially, you know, the principle of this rule is that that safety net shouldn't really exist for immigrants and their children. And I think that flies in the face of basic morality. With the flick of a pen, the Trump administration hopes to not deny others the opportunity to achieve their own piece of the American dream that I, you know, am honored to have had. In the past, the public charge test has been abused to deny innocent people entry into our country based solely on their race or religion, from Irish Catholics in the late 19th centuries to Jews fleeing the Holocaust. Now the Trump administration is trying to unilaterally and radically expand this rule to crack down on legal immigration and to further essentially what I think is a racist vision of America where immigrants and people of color are not welcomed or valued. And I don't think it's any kind of accident, the timing of this rule and the elections that are coming, but I believe America is better than this. Thanks, everyone, and I'll turn it back.
Thanks so much, Mira. And our final speaker before we open it up for questions is Aijin Poo. Aijin?
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining the call this morning. I'm the director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance and co-chair of Families Belong Together, the broad coalition of hundreds of organizations that have come together to stop family separation and promote the ability of children and families to stay together. We represent a growing workforce of women who work in our homes, and they care for our children as nannies, our parents as caregivers, they maintain sanity in our homes as house cleaners, and they're disproportionately immigrant women and mothers. And like many Americans, they're in jobs where they're expected to go above and beyond, and they're not adequately compensated for their work. They make it possible for everything and everyone else to contribute in this economy, and yet their own contributions are deeply undervalued. And I think many of us can relate to that, given that we live in an economy where 70% of the workforce earns less than $50,000 per year. We're all going above and beyond and still struggling to make ends meet and take care of our families. And this is the story of the women I represent. And it is precisely the women who I describe and their children who will be the ones affected by this rule. The women and children that we're counting on, the women we're counting on to take care of our families, who've been an indispensable part of millions of families and communities across the country, who will be harmed first and most by these measures. The measure literally prevents millions of parents from doing what all parents do, which is ensure their children and families are safe and healthy. Like we saw earlier this year with this administration's zero humanity policy at the border, there seems to be no limit to the ways in which this administration is willing to harm children and families. And millions of Americans of all walks of life protested then, and we will again now, because these policies are un-American. We do not support using children as political pawns, and our core value of family unity is not disposable. At our core, we believe that children have the right to be children and that families belong together. We have the opportunity to stop this measure, and that is what we must do. So we have a broad coalition of organizations led by the ones on this call who are coming together to stop this proposal from moving forward. And it is just a proposal. It will not go into effect if we come together to do what it takes to stop it. So I want to again direct everyone to the protectingimmigrantfamilies.org website to get involved. And I'll hand it back to you, Maria Elena.
Thank you so much, Aijin, and thanks to each of our speakers. Operator, let's give instructions how people can queue up to ask a question.
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and 1 on your touch-tone telephone. You may withdraw yourself from the question queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, it is star and 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause a moment to allow questions to queue. Once again, star and 1 to ask a question. And our first question comes from Maria Pinier with Law Opinion. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes. Thank you so much for doing this call on a Sunday morning. I did email a whole bunch of questions ahead, but I wanted you to address the following. For Maria Elena, can you talk a little more about the specifics of the Protect Families campaign, what that is about? And to anyone on the panel, do you, as part of your call to action against the proposal, do you foresee filing a lawsuit to stop it in the courts? You know, what kind of shape will that pushing back have? And if you could also address, if you could break down specifically the groups of immigrants that will be directly impacted by this. I mean, the proposal doesn't seem to have a specific number of people that will be impacted. So if you could break down the categories or examples of people that will be hurt by this, I would really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Maria. So I did not see the questions beforehand, but we'll make sure to take a look at those and see if we can respond also via email. And I think I'm going to direct some of your questions to different people on the call. I guess I'll start first from our end at the National Immigration Law Center. One is, and I think this is actually probably for any questions that are pending, the proposed rule is 477 pages. We have been, many of us on this call have been, and our teams have been analyzing them for the last, less than 24 hours, and we'll continue to do so. That said, Maria, unequivocally, I can tell you from the National Immigration Law Center's perspective that we are exploring litigation and have been. We were waiting to see what the proposed rule would be since the leaked drafts that we've seen have had substantial changes in between. This is what the administration is proposing, so this is what we will be analyzing to assess the litigation, just as we've done against the Muslim ban or DACA or other anti-immigrant proposals from this administration. In terms of the Protecting Immigrant Families campaign, as I mentioned earlier, CLASP and MILK came together specifically early on, so this was early last year, because we knew that this was potentially going to have a devastating impact on hundreds of thousands of millions of people. And the campaign has been set up for the last year. We have about 200 active organizations across the board, including all of the groups on this call. And we've been doing policy analysis of the proposed rule. There's a research working group, which will, now that we have the actual proposed text from the administration, we're working with a couple of independent research firms to do the analysis of how many people would actually be impacted by this rule. There is a legal working group, which is where we've been thinking through our litigation strategies. There's a communications and outreach. One of the most important pieces of work that we have ahead of us is to educate our low-income immigrant communities about what this proposed rule is, right? And for you, Maria Lopinion, right, so critical mm-hmm. that your readers understand this is still just a proposal, as several of us have said. This is not final. It is not retroactive. And it will not be final for several months still. After the 60-day comment period, which does not begin until they actually post the rule on the Federal Register website, which could take some days, maybe even weeks. So once the 60-day clock starts ticking after that, there's a 60-day comment period. After that period closes, they are, in theory, supposed to review every comment. We have an aspirational goal of submitting at least 100,000 comments. That will hopefully then mean that they will review all of that, take that into account, and that will come from a broad sector of stakeholders. The campaign mm-hmm. currently has active members in over 28 states, and these are both blue and red states. We have local stakeholders, state and local government agencies, anti-poverty groups, health groups, children's groups, immigrant rights groups, of course, business leaders. So it's a very, very broad cross-section. It's the representation of civil society, people who believe that this is a country in which we all should be able to have the tools and resources we need to thrive, rather than having this new wealth test that this administration is trying to impose on our country. Mm-hmm. Olivia, anything you want to add on the campaign and some of the other questions that Maria asked?
I thought that was a great answer. I'll add two short things. The first one about the campaign, building on Maria Elena's last point, I would also highlight the breadth of different kinds of people and groups who see how damaging this is. So, for example, the disability community, seniors, children's advocates. Maria Elena highlighted business leaders, the faith community, state and local governments. So I do think that over the comment period, there may well be important stories emerging about the more specific and targeted impacts in each of these areas, because there are in those 477 pages lots of details whose damage we haven't really completely played out yet, like new words about the ways in which being sick could hold you back, even if you did everything else right. So I do think that the breadth of the coalition and of the potential damage is really important. The other thing I would say, you asked us about groups of immigrants specifically, and I would say two things. The first is that the people directly targeted by this rule are the people who are playing by the rules, people who are documented, probably people who are working, as IGN highlighted, people who are raising children. Raising children is a particular problem in this rule because they look at family members when they're thinking about whether your income meets their test. So that's who it targets. What we know from our research at CLASP and that of many other groups is that the chilling effect and the anxiety go far beyond documented families anticipating what it might take to get a green card. There are many other families who are worried and already choosing not to do what as parents they know they really want to do for their children.
Great. Thank you, Neera. I think we're going to be losing you soon. Is there anything you wanted to add to this question? Or any closing comments before you?
No, this is all good.
Great.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay, great. Thank you. Operator, next question.
Our next question comes from Dara Lind with Vox.com. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hey, folks. I understand that with the regulation being 447 pages, there may not be specific answers to this. But given especially the changes from previous drafts in terms of which benefits would be counted and whose use of them would be counted, what specific benefits are you worried about people being eligible for but it counting against their green card application? Because the examples in the regulation, I'm not sure how broad a population they apply to. So, you know, looking through this, if there's a concern about people beyond the just bigger chilling effect concerns, people not taking benefits that they're eligible for because it would prejudice their green card application, what benefits are you thinking about and who would be targeted by that?
Great. Thanks, Dara. Olivia, do you want to start?
Sure. Let me start because I think you're right to highlight that there's that we're still going into the details of it. But I would note that the proposal explicitly mentions Medicaid SNAP, public housing benefits, and Medicare Part D,
subsidies
under Medicare Part D. So in addition, separate from that, it has income tests and it has health tests. So all of those pieces are part of what might prevent people from being able to stabilize their families. I think we have big worries on the healthcare, housing, nutrition front. In the nutrition arena, for example, a parent who is eligible can't take themselves out and get SNAP only for their children because its eligibility is organized around a household. So I think that the estimate in the document is in the hundreds of thousands. We think that's substantially underestimated when you think about the chilling effect and the effect of the health and income conditions.
Gotcha.
Thank you.
Great. And I would just add, I think in addition to what Olivia just mentioned, a couple of other things that I think are really concerning, which is one piece is just the totality of the circumstances test, right, that they will be looking at. And including things in there, right, is like, is the person English proficient or not? Is the person working full-time or a full-time student? And if they're neither a full-time student or working full-time, which the reality of today's work for low-wage workers, for many immigrant workers, they may not be. Or what if it's a mother who just gave birth, who is taking care of her child, and isn't working full time because she's taking care of her child. That is where the details are going to matter greatly about how will this ultimately, this test of taking a look at the totality of the circumstances and the discretion of who will be making that determination of whether someone is a public charge or not. And it's that radically expansion of the number of benefits that would be able to be there. And then the last thing, I think, you know, just at a very basic human level, when given the fact that SNAP and housing are two of the benefits that are included explicitly here, the reality is that if a parent doesn't have access to that food support or that health support or housing support, their children are going to suffer. This means children, U.S. citizen children, are going to have less food to eat on the table. They will perhaps end up being homeless. They will perhaps not have the access to the health care that they need to be healthy and to thrive. And so the ramifications, and again, we're still very much in the early analysis of this, but the ramifications of this are much, much greater and will be devastating for families and children in particular. Operator, any other questions on the queue?
Yes, we will take our next question from Ted Hessen with Politico. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, all. Thank you for having the call. And forgive me if you did address this at some point, but are there obvious places where you feel litigation will arise? You know, I'm wondering particularly about effects on U.S. citizen children or something along those lines. Have you already identified areas like that?
You know, we didn't, Ted, this is Maria Elena, thanks for joining. We did not address that here, mainly because we have been doing the analysis in terms of the litigation strategy based on previous drafts. So as good, cautious lawyers, we're going to want to do our analysis based on this new text. But one thing for sure is the impact on U.S. citizen children, right? We do know that they will be adversely impacted by this rule, even if they're not directly being, even if the rule doesn't directly impact them, but it impacts their parents and family members. And we are, one of the things that we'll be doing also is looking at the comment period as the period of time during which not only we'll be finalizing our legal analysis and preparing litigation, but secondly, actually learning as people submit comments about how this will be impacting different sectors of the country and the community to really assess what are potential legal claims, as well as who are the potential plaintiffs to be bringing this lawsuit. And of course, we at the National Immigration Law Center, and we have a team of partners that we are ready to co-counsel with, but we expect that there may be other lawsuits as well, especially from states and localities who will be impacted by this. Operator, any other questions?
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone. We'll go ahead and take our next question from Harris Meyer with Meyer Healthcare. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks very much. I was wondering, is this highly unusual or unusual for a rule to be announced before it's actually issued or proposed? Also, I'm wondering if you know any significant differences that you've already spotted between this rule or this announcement and the leaked rule. And third, is there a possibility of challenging this legally because it lacks an adequate rationale for changing longstanding federal policy? So those are the three questions, I can repeat them if you want.
Great. Nope, I think I've got them. Olivia, do you want to start with the last question, and I think maybe even just about the fact that this is a proposal rather than a final reg?
Sure. I mean, I'll defer to you, Marielena, on the question of is there a potential legal challenge on the lack of rationale, but let me underline that the comments will surely indicate that there is no research rationale, and in fact, all of the research suggests it's a terrible idea. So I think the litigation, as Marielena will speak to more fully, is going to, and as she just said, would be developed over the course of the coming months and relate to what a final rule looks like. But I think your point that there's no rationale is right. Your question about unusualness, I have to say, having spent a lot of years putting forth regulations myself at HHS, I would say that putting a regulation forward on a Saturday night, long before or before it's actually proposed, is extremely unusual, and we can all only speculate about the reason, but one potential reason is that it's very weak in its rationale and damaging in its content, and Saturday night seems like a time people might not notice it. But in fact, we do notice it and are expecting to be able to highlight the damage and the dangers.
Yeah. So I think just the only thing I would add on that is, again, as I mentioned to the previous questions about the litigation, we're very much exploring the litigation now that we have a final text of the proposed rule. And as Olivia mentioned, the fact that it is proposed is normal. I think the one thing I would say about this actually is that the draft that were leaked the first time, especially early in 2018, the administration was actually thinking, was planning to do this through an executive order as they've done so many others, so many other anti-immigrant proposals. So it's very interesting to see how they changed their strategy, and I think in large part because of the litigation that we and other partners have brought over the last year and a half. And so they're going through this route, which at least they're going through the proper channels under the Administrative Procedures Act. I think the other thing that is important, and I think this is just a reminder as we close out the call, is that this is still just a proposal. What we saw through the previous drafts were much more extreme and radical. This still will have an equally devastating impact on large numbers of families. But I think it's a testament to when we come together, and we come together especially across communities, across sectors of our country, and fight back, we can achieve this. The different stakeholders that went to meet with the Office of Management and Budget, whether it was the American Academy of Pediatrics, whether it was educators, whether it was local government officials, all whom were able to explain what the impact of those drafts, the leaked draft would have, I confidently believe that that is what helped narrow the scope of this proposed rule that is now about to be published in the Federal Register. And so we will continue to work together to fight back for our communities, for our country. We don't believe, despite the efforts of this administration, that we should have racial or wealth tests for our country and for people who, just like previous generations of immigrants and refugees have done, who have come here to find a better life for them and for their children, same way my family came. If this rule were in effect when we came in the 1970s from Colombia, my parents also would not be able to have gotten green cards because we also had to rely on food stamps and other safety net programs while we were, you know, my parents had been laid off in between their factory jobs. And so we know that this is part of our American story, and we know that there are millions of people out there who will be able to recount a similar story of how they would not be able to get a green card and be able to make America their home if this rule becomes public. And we really are asking everyone in the country to come together for our children, for the future of this country, and submit comments over the next 60 days through the protectingimmigrantfamilies.org website. We'll have a lot more information and resources there as well. A thank you to each of our speakers today. First and foremost to Olivia Golden, our partner in, co-lead in the Protecting Immigrant Families campaign, as well as Dr. Colleen Kraft, to Mira Tendon, and to Ai-Jen Koo. And thanks to all of you from the media who joined us today. Have a great day.